John Williams' film night has become one of the most eagerly anticipated evenings of the Tanglewood season. It takes place tomorrow night in the Shed for a celebration of the music of the silver screen. It's a wonderful pleasure to welcome John Williams back to the Roundtable. Thank you so much for taking the time out.
I'm happy to be here and visit the Roundtable again and to come up here to Tanglewood and have this annual party that we have called Film Night. And I think we'll have a good addition this year.
What can people expect this year?
Well, we have a program that will begin with featuring two of David Lean's films. We'll play an overture to Blythe Spirit, which is an early film that Lean directed, and then Passage to India, a beautiful sequence of film cut to Maurice Jarre's music. I have always thought that Foster, E.M. Foster's novel, Passage to India, is one of the most beautifully written pieces about the clash of cultures, the situation with the British and the Indians in the 1920s, and so beautifully done. Before the age of computer simulation, every long shot you see and every crowd shot you see, thousands of people, all recreated and reenacted by David Lean, who may have been, in many ways, the greatest film director we've ever had. I know my friend Steven Spielberg feels that way. And the second piece we'll do is Lawrence of Arabia, which, again, is vast deserts and great horse charges and a fabulous performance by Peter O'Toole, which people remember, again, with the music of Maurice Jarre. And these are edited excerpts, given kindly permission from the studios involved for us to do this. And it's a wonderful opportunity to remind people of Lean's great art and to hear Maurice Jarre's lovely music for these two great films. In addition, it's a pretty comprehensive program, actually. We have the Tanglewood Festival Chorus, and there'll be some children will join us also for Dry Your Tears Africa, which is a little bit of a story in itself, but it had to do with the end of the film, Amistad, the returns of the Africans having been freed by the American Supreme Court then and defended by John Quincy Adams. And a sequence from the end of Saving Private Ryan, a piece of music called Hymn to the Fallen, for which we'll see a collection of photographs and images having to do principally with D-Day, the anniversary of which was this year, June 6th, 1944, rather, marked the 70th anniversary, I guess, of D-Day itself. And there's some wonderful footage. Not Defense Department footage or Signal Corps footage, but all footage done by great directors, most of them in Hollywood, of, again, reenactments of D-Day itself, which viewers will remember from Saving Private Ryan. And we'll see shots of the vast Pacific carrier fleets that were sent out to the South Pacific during those years. And it's a very inspiring piece of film, and I thought it would be appropriate to mark that anniversary of D-Day in that way.
Can you get away without doing popular films as well, as far as a Star Wars or a Harry Potter or an E.T.?
I guess I probably could get away with it. But sometimes people will come to the concert and say, oh, we're very disappointed. You know, we came from North Carolina and we thought you might play Star Wars or E.T. or one of these things. So I do some of it always, and I always hope that these pieces will still be welcome, principally now at the end of concerts. You know, we will do a piece of Star Wars, and we have a piece of E.T. and a few other things of mine that people might know. And in addition to that, in the second half, something that's really fun, I think, I wanted to do something about dance in film. And so we have three films that we'll have some fun with that, which I describe very quickly to you. But I think when we see a dance sequence, if you go back way back to Fred Astaire, for example, you see that all these fabulous athletics done by these people, photographed by some geniuses, and we don't really realize that every move had to be planned, choreographed, lit with lights, have a camera capture the motion of these people in an artistic way, and it was done so beautifully. Just to sum it up very quickly, having worked with so many of them, I remember so many names that worked in Hollywood who were choreographers that the public does not remember. Fred Astaire and Gene Kelly. They will remember Bob Fosse a little bit better, Gower Champion a little bit better than that. And then we come more recently to Rob Marshall, who's done Chicago in more recent years and so on. So the subject and the history of these choreographers and their contribution to the films that we have enjoyed is something that I think about, occasionally remark about, and I think these film clips will reflect, particularly in the finale of a very sort of silly collection of 1920s Charleston things that make a nice menu, I think, of representative of classic Hollywood choreography.
This may be a difficult question to answer given how long you've been doing this, but it just struck me in your beautiful description a moment ago about the images in the piece for Saving Private Ryan, as well as David Lean, and even to the footage that you'll be showing of the musicals. You're very aware of the image. Do you always think of it musically, in the sense of does it alter the way that you look at things because you have been so involved with adding the music to that image?
Well, I think the answer probably has to be yes at some unconscious level, maybe. Certainly when I'm watching films, as I sometimes do of necessity, that don't have any music, to try to imagine where the orchestra, if it is an orchestra delivering the music, would make its contribution and not detract from what you see, but in some way add to the rhythm or the dynamics or the editorial tempo of what we see. And I suppose one develops a kind of an eye and an ear for these things that come with years of practice. And, you know, it's exciting. I mean, many of my younger colleagues will look at the same material and hear it a different way, and it's very exciting sometimes what they do. So I think it's a lovely art form that's very much alive, and really, when you think about it, very young. We've only had sound in movies for 80 years, well, compared to vocal and orchestral music, which has been with us and developing for centuries, that this is really just, you know, the baby stages of image and sound. And the delivery of these things in an enclosure, more and more experimentation done by Dolby and others of how to have the ideal room where the atmosphere and the ambiance and space of what we see in front of us. We have some of it now in the stereophonic representation of film, but there are great improvements coming along which will get people away from their home television sets and give them an experience in sight and sound that now becoming technologically available, which is going to be very exciting. And that will produce composers and choreographers and lighting directors and performers doing things at the moment unimagined, I think. So I think, yes, all of these things are a result of the working conditions that we work in and live with.
You were one of the few artists that I have met, which I think is beautiful, that is optimistic for the future of their craft.
Well, I want to be. Some of us might look at the Passions and Masses of Bach, for example, and say that there probably isn't a composer alive who can manage the polyphonic complication of that's in this work, the mastery of Baroque. I mean, we're not building cathedrals like they used to, in a way, you know. So should we look forward to cathedral construction? Well, probably won't have the same polyphony that Bach did. But certain music is part of us. It's part of our breathing, our speaking, our spiritual lives, and all the rest of it. And I have to be optimistic that it will be with us as language will be with us. It will change, but we will use it and need it, and it's part of us. So I think, I mean, obviously optimism these days is always laid against all the realities of the world's situation and worldwide resources and the challenge of all art to cause us to look anew at all of our assumptions and question these assumptions that we have and try to learn together how we can better manage the planet. So, yes, I'm optimistic, but I also know we have huge social challenges. And some of these can be met by artists who can articulate and create works that can cause us to think and rethink and join together in the management of our shared challenges, problems around the world. I'm optimistic.
John Williams will be conducting tomorrow night at the Shed at Tanglewood Film Night 2014 at 8:30. One of the other things I want to talk to you about is the beautiful sculpture that you commissioned by a wonderful sculptor, Penelope Jenks, who you commissioned a sculpture of Leonard Bernstein, who had a wonderful career here for 5 decades. Obviously, this is a passion project for you.
It has been. It's been a passion project and a really, so to speak, fun project also. I've had great pleasure working with Penelope Jenks. Very briefly, to tell people listening that Penelope came to my attention when I saw the statue of Eleanor Roosevelt in New York City, which I advise anyone to go see. And I thought, at the time of making a portrait of Aaron Copland for the Tanglewood campus, where there was already a small memorial to Mr. Copland. And she did it, and she did it beautifully. And then I thought, the two other spiritual fathers of Tanglewood, Serge Koussevitzky, of course, the founder of this magical place, which when you think about it as an idea before it ever existed, what a fantastic notion that the symphony orchestra would have a festival and a school and a tradition of the way it's become. And the third member of that spiritual triumvirate with Copland and Koussevitzky is Bernstein himself, who, as you said, was here 40, 50 years as a, first as a student. And I have said he was a graduate of Harvard and also of Curtis, but he really came to Tanglewood, I think grew up here, found himself here musically and spiritually, etc. So he really, and then inspired generations of us in his work in music and also his work in writing and lectures and speeches and all the thinking that Bernstein did. And so we're a little bit out of order. Penelope Jenks, she has done Copland beautifully. She has now done Bernstein, I think, beautifully. And I recommend people to come to Highwood at Tanglewood to view this wonderful work. And next will come, we hope, in a year or two or three, a portrait of Serge Koussevitzky to honor the fact and put light on the knowledge that without his idea, we wouldn't be looking at this magnificent place, we wouldn't be hearing the music we hear, we wouldn't have this seed of the best of American music that's grown here now for whatever, 60 or 70 years. We talked about optimism earlier. I think Tanglewood will be with us for a very, very long time. And the spirit of these three gentlemen, Koussevitzky, Copland, and Bernstein, very important. And they will be with us also. And Penelope Jenks has really memorialized two of these gentlemen in the most brilliant and masterful way, I think. So I hope people listening will come, even just visit the campus and see these works of Penelope Jenks.
They're absolutely beautiful, and this most recent one, which was just unveiled this week, of Bernstein, it's a younger Bernstein. And was that your choice?
Penelope and I discussed this at length, and she made several models, if you like. We discussed, I will call him Lenny, if I may, for this conversation with Leonard Bernstein, and I think he probably would wish it for this kind of a conversation, that a younger Lenny, people remember he was the most beautiful young man. Warner Brothers wanted to make him a movie star, actually, and people may know. And in his middle life, he was marvelous looking. And when he was older, he changed a lot. He had been very ill the last few years. So we had to make a choice of what time of Lenny's life should be represented here. And I felt, and I think Penelope agreed, that somewhere in middle life, when he still had his health and his best energy. And I think what she's done here, not accurately in any way, would probably represent him in his middle 50s or maybe 60 years of age. Still a strikingly handsome man, but with a maturity that perhaps he didn't have as a younger person, and without some of the ill health that showed in later photographs and film of him. So I think she's made a beautiful choice. And I particularly was pleased the other day when we unveiled the bust that some of the musicians from the Boston Symphony came, and they knew Mr. Bernstein some of the senior members in all of these various stages of his life, and they all said, "Ah, oh, this is the best of Lenny. We remember his mouth that way at rehearsal, remember his eyes," and so on. So yes, it was a concert choice. Of course, it's a choice. We hope it's the right one. I believe it has been. And I think, again, Penelope has done a masterful job at not only finding this good moment and best moment, I think, in his life, but executing it in a way that we can enjoy it.
Is it possible for you to quantify in any way the influence that he had on you?
Hard to quantify. Certainly, well, a very powerful one. I mean, I think, looking back very quickly, I think the first music of Lenny's that I really knew well was West Side Story. And I'd had some experience playing and writing jazz and so on, and I could sense right away that metrically, that is in meter or time measure, he had expanded some of the grammar in a way that he did. He also theatricalized it in a way that really quite hadn't been done. Yes, in Porgy and Bess, but this was different. This was a zany, edgy Lenny with offbeat meters and fabulous melodies that went to unexpected places. And there was a freshness about it. And then certainly going on through other works of his as he grew and changed and as I learned a few things, I admired him greatly as a conductor, and he grew as a conductor. He was a fine conductor, New York Philharmonic, when he was there as a younger man. I believe he became a great conductor in the last decade of his life, in his readings of the Mahler symphonies, and all the repertoire, actually, principally Mahler. So, and I would just say finally about Bernstein that there's a collection of his writings which is published under the title Findings. In the end, I believe he was a teacher. That if we listen to what he said, not only about music, but about life and communication that music can provide, a nonverbal one, if you like, and in speeches and in lectures that he did, I mentioned earlier, and even poetry. I mean, he's written some beautiful pieces. But this was a man who was 800 years old in many ways. I mean, he was magical with languages. And every time Richard Dyer, people will know, is a great writer from the Boston Globe, has written that every time you met with Lenny, whether it was an unpleasant meeting about something or a very happy meeting, whatever the encounter was, you came away from talking to Leonard Bernstein learning something you didn't know before. And that's true in my case, and I think it's true of anybody who came in his presence. So he was not perfect. He was flawed. He had his difficulties and experiences in life that were less than ideal, certainly. But this man was a prophet in many ways. And it's really too bad that we lost him as soon as we did. I like to think that he was a spirit who came in our midst, was among us for a very short while, and left too soon.
You said something that struck me as we wrap up, that his later life in the last decade, he became a greater conductor. And I know you're very humble, but do you feel that you are at your best now?
Well, I'd like to feel that way. I'm not sure I have the best energy. I don't have the same energy I had 40 years ago. It's a different kind, I suppose, a different mode of things. We change, we grow. I mean, there are things that we learn, I guess, that we didn't know before. What's interesting about that, though, is sometimes when we're working intuitively, there are things that we later know that we don't need to know. They could be obstructive in some kind of way. I'll put it to you this way. I appreciate, truly, and love music, I mean this truly, more now than I did decades ago, whatever that may mean. I guess it's not an increase in learning, but it's an increase in a kind of awareness, I think, of what it is when we listen hard and often, and the wonder and magic that music has becomes more important as we get older. I was thinking the other day, and then I'll wrap it up, that there's a scene in the film Mission, which I won't take the time to describe, but young people in the forest, primitive people, they were enjoying music and they were transfixed by it, and the elder of the tribe comes and breaks the instruments. The point being that he was afraid in ancient times that music was magic that could cast a spell over us that might disrupt the authority of the establishment and the status quo in the person of this tribal leader who saw music as a threat. It can transport us and transplant us, and we don't see it as a magic threat anymore, but if you think about it, it's something that's coming to us that's nonverbal and that puts us in touch with a lot of parts of ourselves that are basic and even pre-linguistic and post-linguistic. And these are the things, I think, as we practice music more and more and more, the things that we feel more. If that comes under the heading of learning, I don't know. But I think it is real.
So when it comes to the projects you're working on now, if the internet rumors are to be believed, there is obviously a new director for the Star Wars franchise, J.J. Abrams, and you'll be doing the music.
Well, I hope so. I will try to. I'll be one of the veterans from the earlier years of Star Wars. But you and I are speaking now in 2014, and the film should be completed in 2015. I'll write the score the early months of next year. And I look forward to being the senior member of the new production and to seeing what J.J. Abrams will do with the film. I haven't had a clue. I haven't read the script. I don't know what he's got, put it this way, up his sleeve, but I look forward to it.
Well, John Williams will conduct film night tomorrow night at 8:30 in the Shed. You can go to tanglewood.org for more information. And also, certainly, if you're on the grounds of Tanglewood, go see the beautiful new sculpture of Leonard Bernstein at Highwood Manor, as well as the Copeland statue, which is also on the grounds of Tanglewood. John Williams, it's always a great treat, and it's such an honor to spend time with you. I thank you so much.
Thank you for your time and interest very much. It's a pleasure to see you every year.
A great pleasure. Thank you. You're listening to the Roundtables Live remote broadcast from Tanglewood on WAMC.